Blog Talk Radio.
That was ugly.
Yeah, it was. What else? Hey, break. Oh.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing tonight?
Real good, Mr. Allen, real good. And I understand we have a guest, and then we've got, all kinds of things happening. Yeah,
exactly.
Park Board meeting being torn up last night in North Minneapolis at North Commons. We'll be talking about that. But I understand we have an important guest, so why don't you just start it on out? We're going an hour and a half tonight, right? Let our listening audience know. And so we're on the move. Go right ahead, Mr. Allen.
Yep, and the phone lines are open at 347-426-3904. I'd like to welcome Mr. Calvin Quarles. He is the former general manager of KMLJ, and there's a lot of controversy surrounding him not being at KMLJ. And I thought, Mr. Edwards, that it would be a great thing to have him to come on our show, and we can inquire of him, you know, things that might have happened or not happened to set the record straight and get the story straight out there, plus the Spookdom 5 board members. So, and you know me, I'm always in it to kind of shake somebody.
But
anyway, we'd like to welcome Mr. Quarles, Mr. Calvin Quarles. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, Mr. Allen. How you doing? How you doing, Mr. Edwards?
Real good, sir. Real good.
Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you.
Yeah, we appreciate having you here. So, could you give us a little bit about your background in radio? I mean, we know it's kind of like a rhetorical question for us, but for our domestic and international listeners that have never heard of your name through this platform, tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
Okay. Well, I grew up in a little small town in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, I was born in 1961. So, of course, as you know, you guys know, there was not a lot of urban or African-American target radio stations early in the 60s. But as I grew, I was lucky enough to be able to get a signal from a radio station, a little AM signal from a radio station in Nashville, Tennessee. A gentleman named Spider-Man had actually bought some airtime at a small station in Nashville, and he only came on at 10 o'clock from 10 to 2 a.m. And you know about
boy, don't I remember those days.
right. As you know, back then also, you know, AM stations powered down a little bit at night, so it was very hard to get the station. But I would take my little transistor radio out front in my front porch and just listen to it. And I was always amazed. I've always been really intrigued and loved music, but I couldn't sing. So I was intrigued by the fact that this gentleman was presenting black music to black people, and I fell in love with the industry then. So I got into the radio business at an early age, and since then I've worked at several stations and went to college at Eastern Kentucky University and got a degree in radio and television broadcasting. Before coming here to Minneapolis, I was actually working for Sheridan Broadcasting Corporation's Atlanta division. Yeah. I was the head of their Atlanta division, which oversaw a gospel network with Sheridan Gospel Network. We oversaw the production department of American Urban Radio Networks. And what I actually did was one of my mentors actually said, Calvin, you've already been GM at a gospel network, so now I think it's time for you to kind of get some sort of grasp on how a local radio station runs from an administrative general manager's perspective. Now, all my experience, actually, I started out on the air. I've done production. I've done sales. I've done marketing and promotions. I've pretty much done every area of the radio business. But this is my first – KMLJ has actually been my first, foray at dealing with a local radio station being a GM. And, you know, and I've learned a lot, because really what you do is you have – to be a lot more engaged from a general management perspective in the community and talk to a lot of community members and deal with, you know, as you guys know, you've been here for a while in Minneapolis, deal with just the politics of being in the cities. And, you know, and it's been really, really an educational and really an enlightening situation for me. So for over the 31 years, that's what I've been doing, just basically doing radio. Of course, I've had those times where radio don't pay enough and I got to take care of my family, so I go out and I start doing other things. But I always came back to radio because I have a love for that, and I've always been in the management side. So for me, it's been one of those experiences that have been really rewarding.
Okay. Calvin, tell us about the infrastructure of KMLJ under your leadership. Now, I know they're a nonprofit, they're a 501c3, and based on the Minnesota Statute 513A, which says they can't lean political, they have to be nonpartisan, and they have to somehow, there's some leeway for extra time. But now let's look at the structure, the hierarchy of KMLJ, and let's start with the board of directors. As you know, I've attempted several times to gain access to the board of directors. Was there ever 13 board of directors that you can identify during your tenure there?
As a matter of fact, there was. When I was hired, there were 16 board members. But this is what I really want to make this point clear, because I think a lot of people here in the Twin Cities don't really understand. And I know Mr. Edwards, too, because he's been around. He's also been a board member. But KMOJ is actually a program of the Center for Communication and Development. The Center for Communication and Development is actually the nonprofit organization that oversees, that the community has designated to oversee the license of KMOJ, the FCC license. Now, when Center for Communication and Development was established, the community came together, and it was early in the 70s, mid-70s. Am I correct, Mr. Edwards?
No, actually, it was 1966.
Okay, that far back. They came together, and they said, I mean, I didn't know it was that far back. You're telling me something different, but that, I mean, something new. But the community came together and said, okay, we want a radio station that's going to target and talk about issues that affect our community, which is the African-American community. Because back then, of course, back in the 60s, there was no such radio station in Minnesota. Most of the urban stations back then were in the South, and they were very, very far between. I think there was one in Memphis, and there was one in Atlanta. So there was not a lot of urban stations focusing on black issues. But I know that what happened was the community came together. They said, okay, we're going to form this organization so we can apply for FCC license. So they did. That means basically the Center for Communication and Development and its board of directors has to answer to the community, because basically they have to have the community's best interest at heart. The target audience in the community they had to work for was the African-American community. Nothing's changed from 1960-something until now, up until this situation happened. And when this situation happened, the dynamic changed. The board of directors is still supposed to answer the community. And basically what that means is transparency, because nothing means more to the African-American community in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Nothing means more than having a vehicle to express their concerns about what's going on in their community. And that's what KMOJ is about. Well, now that's not the case. So that since now the board of directors has dropped down from the 16 when I came in 2004, and it's kind of dwindled down to 5. I'm not sure if that's still the case, but 5 members actually made the decision that, you know, that changed the trajectory of the organization. And those 5 members decided that they were going to make a decision that was not conducive or not accepted by the community, but they refused to talk to the community leadership about it.
Okay. In the last 3 weeks before the board made a decision, were you aware of an agreement between the station and the former council on black Minnesotans? And the reason why I'm asking this is that there's some things that are happening in the community that I think are pretty foul and need to be out there. And I'm not going to mention any names, but I'm just going to ask you you know, as the acting general manager before, you know, the mysterious five did whatever they did. Were you aware of an agreement between the station and the council?
Yeah, that's what you're saying is new to me, because basically the last time I had a conversation with my board members, it was, you're doing a great job, we're happy to have you. So this was kind of unexpected to me when this situation happened. So, no, I was not aware of that.
Let me be clear on that one, Mr. Quarles. What you were saying is that your board, irrespective of the number, were indicating to you job well done. In fact, you have served for, is it 11 years you've been with us?
It was almost 12. It was nearly 12. It was 12 years
all
in
right.
June. Yeah.
Okay. And what you were in essence saying is that the board was giving every indication that they were satisfied with your leadership, correct?
Yeah. Correct.
Okay,
never had a write-up, never had any kind of disciplinary action, was always told verbally that I was doing a great job.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. I don't want you, and then I'll step in when you get through.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, based off the five board members, I've never seen anything posted where there was a board meeting for the Camel J board, nor did I know anyone but one of the five board members. I know who that person is. I don't really care to know it personally, but during that time, did they seek to stop or derail a pending proposal from an agency on the first floor of the building to buy the whole building?
I was involved with the KMO with that whole situation. I don't know if you recall the history. Mm-hmm. We had a situation where we've always been major partners with Minneapolis Public Housing, and we had an issue on Girard when KMOJ was on Girard, where Minneapolis Public Housing had an issue.
Go ahead, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, they had an issue with the building. The building was actually about to be condemned because, unbeknownst to them, it was built on, I guess, a reservoir or something that deals with it's a lot of technical, geographic stuff that's going on. But the building had issues, so they had to condemn the building because the building was actually sinking. So we actually had to move. We had to move, and we was actually homeless for about 3 months. And we had to put the transmitter. We had to put our computer in the transmitter site, and then we moved over to Lake Street while we were negotiating to actually purchase a part owner in the building that the station's currently in. Well, when that situation, once the building was purchased and we had the agreement and so on and so forth, us and the partner started construction. And we found out it was more than, if the building was going to cost more to rehab than what we were financially able to do. So what we ended up doing, we negotiated a lease payment. So that's really what that happened. But we had a environment zone grant that was awarded us, and we realized the environment zone grant.
How much was that, do you recall? How much was that?
It was about 250,000.
Okay.
Yeah, and what we did, Ron, we actually we worked on trying to get in the space, and simultaneously, I had aggressively reached out to try to get with the FCC to get a power increase.
Mm-hmm.
So we were raising money simultaneously for both situations, and I was like, well, listen, I'm not going to move into this new space and put my staff into a situation where they come in and deal with old equipment. Plus, you know how it is. When you move, you want to put new stuff in. So I wanted new equipment because I felt like my staff needed it. I felt like the radio station needed it. So we were grinding, and we raised another almost $400,000 for new equipment and for the new transmitter and to get the power increase complete. So that was a pretty big undertaking. It all kind of happened in about 2 months of each other. So that's really what happened in that situation. So our intentions were to purchase the building. Our intentions were to go in and actually be a part owner, secondary, be a part owner, but it didn't work out financially for us. So the landlord of the building currently, the Ackerberg Group, they decided that we can lease the space, and they gave us a chance to really kind of sit back and say, okay, we're moving too fast. Because, you know, I'm real aggressive when stuff that I do. I want to move real quick on everything. And I had, because I came from a situation where money was always an object. It was always an issue, but it wasn't as much of an issue as it is with KMOJ, because KMOJ is the only financial resource or breadwinner for the entire organization, for Center for Communication and Development, is KMOJ. That's why a lot of people kind of don't know about CCD, but they know about KMOJ. So
speak the gospel,
that's how that
my
happened.
Brother. Speak the truth. That's absolutely correct. Go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so with that said, I guess I was getting to a source that I have that's very close to, I guess, the landlord, who mysteriously mm-hmm. friended me on Facebook about a week ago after I put up this mm-hmm. announcement, said that there was a offer being tendered from the agency that's downstairs for the whole building. And I guess that's mm-hmm. what I'm asking. Did you know anything about that? Were you aware of that? Was that something go ahead.
I don't know anything about that, Don. I do know that the organization downstairs is growing. I do know that the organization downstairs need more space. I'm not quite sure how that particular – I know that KMOJ has signed a new lease. I don't know how that lease is being worked out with the landlord. But I know, just like with anything else, if you're not taking care of your business, then landlords going to look for options that's not going to hurt landlords. So I can't really speak on that. All I know is based on my experience at the radio station that our relationship with the landlord was great. I know there were some issues in reference to how the organization was taking care of the rent payments, but I don't know how that is now. I can't really speak on that.
Okay, I'm going to take over here. I'm going to go screen some calls.
Sure, Don, sure. You say you're getting ready what? Oh, you with me? All right, let me do this, because I think it's so important that the community really remember and know the history, because, Mr. Quarles, you've been right on point. You reminded people of something that I began to see them forget, if you will. And then I even began to see some of the boards over the last, let's say, 15 years begin mm-hmm. to forget the actual holder of the FCC license, the Center for Communication mm-hmm. and Development. Let me do it like this. Let me give the narrative like this, and just, you know, feel free to jot it down as I talk about it, so, you know, we'll help you in your own reflections. In 1963, a group of five women, four African-American, one white, all residents of public housing, began to talk in terms of a radio station mm-hmm. because there had been an act by the Congress of the United States in which a commercial nonprofit was a possibility. At one point, let's say in the early 70s, we probably had about 11 of those types of stations throughout the United States. But in 1963, these five women, joined by a African-American man, began to meet and began to talk about a station. And in fact, contrary to what some people say, it was they that came up with the name Kamoja. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Three of those women are deceased. Two are still alive, and the gentleman in question is still alive. By early 1965, they had made application. FCC was very accommodating, and they had made application for a license and had come up with a very innovative idea of following the example of Brown Institute out there in South Minneapolis, which, of course, is renowned for its training of media and et cetera, et cetera. And so the Center for Communication Development, as you know, was going to be the training arm of a
right.
great dream, if you will. Now, mm-hmm. in 1965, the FCC approved. Announcement went out. Community was pumped up. The station, of course, was the property, of the residents of public housing.
Mm-hmm.
And by 1966, the park board, if you remember, when the station was there on 8th and Bryant, directly mm-hmm. across the street to the east was, of course, a series of apartment buildings, right? Well,
mm-hmm.
one of those apartment buildings became the original studio and headquarters of KMLJ. In fact, the first broadcast that we did it in the kitchen, sitting at a kitchen table. The quote-unquote engineer with the equipment that we had was under his control, and sitting at the other end of the kitchen table would be the announcer, and there and there were chairs for the guests. The station, actually, between you and I, the station started out basically at about 100 watts, so you would be lucky if you could hear it, you know, 5 blocks, 10 blocks up the street. But because we were able to put the antenna on top of that high-rise apartment building that used to be there, of course, is gone now with regards to housing that they have down there. Now, the first manager of KMLJ was a woman by the name of Jeanette Cotton. And sir, have followed in the footsteps of a woman who worked hard and fought hard to make KMLJ a success, okay? And there were a couple other individuals, Chico Edner. There was a guy by the name of Williams who actually sued KMLJ and actually took and seized the, with the sheriff's department, seized the transformers and et cetera. In fact, took KMLJ off the air for about 3 or 4 days until the station down in Winona, which was remodeling, made available some of their equipment. But anyways, it started with five women and a gentleman. One of those incorporators was white. The other four were African-American women. Mildred Ogisi is gone, if you will. Carolyn Brusegard, who was white, is gone, if you will, tragically. And there was one other, Carolyn Hadley, who went back and relocated to Omaha, Nebraska. And there were two others, and there was the gentleman. They were the original incorporators of KMLJ. Okay. So you have done a nice job of talking in terms of the structure and et cetera. But I was so glad to hear you remind our community that the actual facilitator of the operation is the Center for Communication Development. Now, early on, the Center for Communication and Development was bringing young men and women of color into that station, training them, putting them on the air, and getting them ready. Only problem was we still had a problem with racism in Minneapolis. And with the exception of WCCO radio, we never were able to really break their backs. Though with some of the smaller stations, WDGY, KITS back in those days and et cetera, we got a couple of people in. But the most important station, WCCO radio, had a brother on there, and he was the man. In fact, he got so good that they used to let him. I'm taking you deep back in history, sir, and poor Donald Allen was just a little boy. He became the engineer for a legendary white commentator by the name of Halsey Hall, who did the Minnesota Twins games. We're now talking back in the late 1960s and the early 70s, okay? His name was Louis Latson. In fact, at one point, Louis Latson left Minneapolis and went to work at some station in Atlanta. You may look back in your files and your recollection, and you may have somebody talk in terms of Louis Latson maybe 35, 40 years ago. Okay? And so I just think it was important that the piece of the history, so that folks who are, you know, just arriving here and et cetera from the great enclaves of Chicago and Detroit and et cetera, know that there's a long history of KMLJ in this city, and that it was founded by citizens and residents of Minneapolis Public Housing who lived right there in what was called the old Sumner Field housing. And I just, I'm glad that you kind of opened that door, because I hear people talking all the time in this town, and it's quite clear that half of them, unless they're in my age group, you know, and I'm clearly a senior citizen, they don't have a clue.
I know. I've heard those same stories. I've heard the stories about it came from a different station. It was different call letters, and they changed it. And I think for me, and I think it's very important that the history of the organization or the radio station is known, because I'm going to tell you guys, I'm going to tell both you gentlemen, and I worked when one of the other entities I oversaw when I was in Atlanta, when I was director of Atlanta Operation for Sheridan, they purchased a company that I used to work for before they actually purchased it, and that's how I got involved in Sheridan Broadcasting Corporation. Was called On Mic Productions, and
okay.
they later changed the name to OMP. And basically what we did was imaging. We did imaging and commercials. That was back in the day before everybody had a laptop or had a computer and they could do their own production. We actually had studios where we did actually radio production for radio stations, and KMOJ was one of our clients. So I knew about the station. I knew about the station 10 years before I even came here.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't, I'll be honest with you, gentlemen, I did not know African-Americans lived in Minnesota. I was like,
okay.
Wait a minute,
okay.
They said Minnesota? Wait a minute, hold on, it's too cold up there. I'm not coming up, I'll never live up there. And, you know, I'm a big football fan, so I would watch the Vikings, and they would always show the outdoor shots where the snow was 18 feet high, and I'm like, boy,
That's when they were playing at the old Metropolitan Stadium.
Exactly,
not in
exactly.
Right.
And I'm like, how can people live there? But I'm going to tell you, I think that's why that station is so important to me, is because I know not only the history, but how important radio stations are to a community.
Yeah.
And for me to watch, people who don't understand the real history of that radio station making decisions that could probably jeopardize the longevity of the radio station, it was very disheartening. I was talking to a friend this morning, and I'm not going to go off on a tangent, but I know that you said an hour and a half, and I like to talk, and I know you and Don like to talk, and hell, we just going to talk.
Mm-hmm.
I told a friend this morning, I said, you know what, the reason why I'm so passionate about the station, because I know what the station means, and I love the station because I made a lot of personal sacrifices moving up here. When I moved up here, both of my sons were in high school, and they're
mm-hmm.
both football players, and they're both pretty good football players. And I missed a lot of football games. I would not leave the house unless I put them in the car with me. So I came up here right when they were in high school, started high school. And I made that decision because, one, I had to take care of my family, but two, I wanted to really listen to my mentor and take an opportunity to really see what it's like to be a station manager at a local radio station, and knowing how commercial radio was, I said, well, I'll start at this non-commercial station and then try to see if I can go back into commercial. Well, I got to the place where I love the community, I love the people, I love what everybody here was doing, and I knew how important the station was to the community. So I told a friend of mine this morning, I said, you know, this situation, you know, people always say, well, you know, why are you so mad? Because you just mad because you got fired. Well, yeah, everybody gets mad because they got fired. Who in the world don't get mad when they get fired?
Right,
but I think
right.
for me, the reason why I held on to it so long, and it took me a couple of months to go through this mental thing that you go through, is because, I want you to think about this analogy. It's almost like when you got a girlfriend, and you love your girlfriend to death, and then all of a sudden, you and your girlfriend break up, but you still love your girlfriend, and you still try to do what you can to get your girlfriend back, but then you realize your girlfriend don't want you back. But then all of a sudden you go through this mental phase where you say, I'm done. I'm done with it. I'm going to move on. I'm going to go ahead and move forward in my life. But you still got love for your girlfriend. And the only way you're going to mess with your girlfriend again if she decides, if you mess with your girlfriend again, is when you got to let her know things going to change if I come back. And I think I'm at that point now where I love the station. I know what the importance of the station is. But I'm afraid that this community is going to lose a very, very valuable communication piece because of people who don't understand how it works. You know,
let me just cut in and say this. I'm glad that
sure.
you said that because
mm-hmm.
And I'll say that it's a rumor, you know, and I'll give a couple people an opportunity to clarify, particularly one that's been at the station a long, 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 long time. And I
mm-hmm.
hear a terrible rumor that negotiations have been going on with regards to allowing, quote-unquote, a takeover of KMOJ, which would make the leadership of that station primarily white, if you will, which would then mean that the African-American community has lost KMOJ. Now, I hope it's a rumor. I hope it's a rumor, and I certainly hope that people like Freddie Bell and others will be able to dismantle that rumor and talk in terms of what the plans are for the future. But I'm telling you, this is what I've heard. This is what I hear talking about. Of course, I have contacts and operatives everywhere. And I'm like, oh, no, no one would think of taking this station away from the African-American community when, in fact, the African-American community gave birth. And I want to repeat again that the original incorporators of that station, starting discussions way back in 1963, were four African-American women, a Caucasian woman, and an African-American male. They were community, man. All the women lived in public housing. The African-American man did not. They were all a part of the community. A couple of them had come from Omaha, Nebraska. That's how they began to raise the question, how come there was no black station around here? You know, now, quiet as it's kept, but Omaha is a smaller city per se. Omaha is extremely black and nationalistic. Ask Ernie Chambers and others, okay? But I just want to concur with what you're saying, because I'm hearing some troubling sounds, if you will. I see some trembling waters, if you will, about the future of this station, which is so close to the heart of community. In fact, you know, one of the greatest, and I think that you've seen some documentation, if it hasn't all been destroyed before you got there 11 years ago, if you know what I mean, in which KMOJ was one of its greatest benefactors and one of the people most attached and who loved that station was the man known as Prince.
Yes.
And people would be surprised, maybe there would be others that would not, about the amount of money that Prince made available to that station to make sure that station kept its head above water, okay? One of the other things people need to understand, contrary to what people like to gossip, KMOJ really did not have that many station managers, which I think reflected some sense of stability. But it was about 15 years ago that things started to kind of slip away and change, and that's when people started getting away from the statutory and legal role of the Center for Communication Development. And the next thing you know, you would ask them about where was the board list for the Center for Communication Development. People tell you there was no such entity. Now, you better not tell that to the SEC.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
So I need to say that as a part of the historical perspective, because we do not have an African-American or black museum in this city and et cetera, and we're not able, we do a pretty poor job here of retaining historical documentation and et cetera, but that's what maybe a brother like me is around here to do, okay?
Exactly.
To keep that information out there.
Let me just go and talk a little bit about what you initially mentioned in reference to a sort of a quote-unquote takeover. I can't speak very much for non-commercial radio, but I can speak highly about commercial radio stations.
Yes, sir.
And you and Mr. Allen can probably concur when you hear what I'm about to say. Back in the day when the FCC actually deregulated the whole radio broadcast industry and allowed entities, major corporations, to purchase more than one station in the market,
yes.
What happened was, some of the white stations or some of the white corporations went and purchased the black-owned radio stations in those markets.
Yes.
So when you talk about taking control of the black-owned radio stations in Miami, taking control of the black-owned radio stations in Atlanta, taking control of the black-owned radio stations in D.C. And Chicago, what happens is you start to dictate the narrative as far as communication is concerned in our community.
There you go.
And the problem that I've seen, and I've talked to several of my colleagues in the industry, and we've all been very irritated. And I'm not, you know, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm making a black and white issue, but there's no white person in the world that can program a radio station better than a black person to black people. And so now you have situations where you have white people programming black radio stations, telling us what we need to listen to, telling us what we need to be saying, telling us how we need to present our product to our people. And that's, for me, as a 31-year vet, that's very discouraging. So let's go back to what you initially said about the rumors that you heard. I don't know about rumors. I know what it looks like. And I'm going to tell you what it looks like over at KMOJ and CCD right now, because I guess in some way, I'm like you and Don. I mean, I kind of say what I think and let it ride. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it to be true, and I don't want nobody to take it for granted. I don't want nobody to say that what I'm saying is true. I'm telling you what I see. This is only Kelvin Quarles' opinion. What I see is a situation where you have board members who aren't transparent. You have a board that's not transparent. And one of the biggest things about CCD and KMOJ and this community here is you have to be transparent. One of the things that I always try to make sure of when I was at that station was being as transparent as possible. We put our financials up on our website. Anytime anybody asked to go to a board meeting, we'd make sure we accommodate them. If somebody was to walk in, and Mr. Allen knows because he's done it several times, he wanted to come in and see the public file. We accommodated him to see the public file. Yes, we made sure you came in and had an opportunity to look at the public file. Well, all those things have to be available to people, even the financials and the board minutes, okay? That's not what's going on right now. And I think the biggest issue that this community is having with the current board is that they don't have access to see and look and see the stability of their radio station, because that station no longer belongs to those five people. It belongs to the entire community. Mm-hmm. So everybody got some say. And everybody got some say on what the direction's going. Everybody should have some say, and everybody should be able to have an opinion, and at least be able to express it to that board on what how the financial and the health of that radio station. And that's not what's happening right now, and that's what's discouraging to people like me who understand that by law, one, and by compliance with the FCC, two, but just let's make sure people know we're doing the right thing for their station. That's not going on right now. So when I look at that and I think about what you said earlier, Mr. Edwards, about somebody infiltrating, there's somebody, we all know in our community there's always puppets. There's always people use some people in our community to be puppets, and they'll tell them when to dance and when not to dance. Mm-hmm. And right now, when just the mere fact of African Americans are not allowing other African Americans to see the health and the vitality of their radio station, to me, seems like there's some sort of conspiracy going on. I'm not going to say it's a conspiracy. All I'm going to say is it's a problem for me as an African American who had 55 years of growing up in the South and then growing up and then moving here, and I see it, and I'm like, wow, something's going on, because I'm used to being in a situation where we're all in this game together.
And we can, we must understand, Mr. Quarles, that we can quickly become the Mississippi of the North. And in fact, on many different issues, unfortunately, even during the 11 years of tenure that you've been here, you unfortunately mm-hmm. have seen that. We've seen things happen here, and one would say, damn, I thought I was in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, or Jackson, Mississippi,
right.
or Tupelo, et cetera. This is the land of, sugar, honey, and whiteness, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad
That's
that
right.
you addressed it. Again, Mr. Quarles and I are not saying that we have any empirical data that indicates that such is happening, but the conversations and the discussions that are going on, and particularly the word that you used, folks are talking who do not have our best interests at heart as the African-American community, as the sons and daughters of the African, who are talking mm-hmm. in terms of changing, quote-unquote, what it is that the African-American community will have made available to it pertaining mm-hmm. to issues important to our survival. And I think that's going to have to be answered, and it's going to have to be answered pretty quick, particularly given the temperature in the United States as we move mm-hmm. into the last 80-some days of the presidential campaign. If the wrong situation emerges and we come out, and so we can say it here on blog radio, et cetera, and we get a Donald Trump, or we get a weakened Democratic Party, we in Black America are
That's
in big trouble.
That's messed up. G?
Yeah, it is, G. Also,
you forgot that Don's a Republican. So.
Oh, I know that Don.
I know you did.
I used to tell Don that he was a rebirth of the Republican reformers of the Emancipation Proclamation of 1863.
That's right. Yeah, he's a Lincoln.
Yeah.
We'll make him a Lincolnite.
Yeah,
that's it. He's a Lincolnite.
But on the serious note, mm-hmm. people better watch the red flag that is gone up. because
well, I'm back, KMOJ is the voice of the community in the Twin
mm-hmm.
Cities. One of the major reasons why we decided and why I suffered through and I begged and pleaded and grinded out and worked with some very, 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 very hardworking board members to get the power increase done was because we realized that we need to saturate the entire Twin Cities. We need to be
yes.
in St. Paul. We need going to Lexington Avenue was not going to get it for us. And now, depending on people to go to TuneIn Radio to get to download the app, is not always going to get it. You got to have that land signal where when people are in their car, they can turn to your station. And I think the biggest problem that I think that irks me, even though I've mentally figured that I need to go ahead and try to move on with my life,
uh-huh.
one thing that I don't want to do is allow somebody or an entity or a group of people to destroy that radio station for this community, because that's the most important thing.
There
just like
go.
Those the same people that you talked about that founded in the 60s, and they knew how important – they knew how important that radio station would be to this community. And I'm going to correct one thing that you had said, Mr. Edwards. It started out, based on what I saw, based on the history of the FCC, it started out as 10 watts. Then it jumped up to 100. And then it jumped to
100. Yeah, I really didn't want to say that we used to sit at the kitchen table.
No, it was 10 watts.
Station.
Yeah, you got to say it. You got to say it.
Yeah.
Because
that,
it was basically.
That our listening audience was, in fact,
exactly.
that which was the Sumner Field Homes.
It was all
we
in
made,
the
we
all
made
in,
a difference.
All in the
we
project.
Made an impact. Yeah, we got
that's
it up
right.
to 100, and then the next thing we know,
it's 5,
and then
went
we
to 7.
Got to the 1,000. But
well, then it went to 8.
The
it was 1,000,
correct.
But it
we
actually
were,
was.
We could barely turn on a light bulb.
Yeah, it was actually when I got here it was 745 watts. It was not 1,000. They had a 1,000-watt transmitter because when you're dealing with when you're dealing with any kind of electronic stuff, you have to go higher than what you actually awarded. As a matter of fact, right now. We're awarded 6,300 watts,
mm-hmm.
but based on our footprint in the market, we can only broadcast at like 54 or 5,600 watts. So
that's
we really
right.
can't broadcast at full power because our footprint would bleed into some other radio station based
mm-hmm.
on, and the FCC, you know, they shun that. But we had to
and
get a 7,500 watts.
Two stations very close to you on both sides of the dial.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
We have KFAI on one side, and then we have I think the current on the other.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to be real careful. And see, one of the things that I always tell people, and one thing about when you're buying transmitters, you can't buy a 6,000-watt transmitter or 6,500-watt transmitter. We had about a 7,500-watt transmitter. But what I did was I made sure that we applied with the FCC and got approval for high definition. So
mm-hmm.
that radio station has the capability of getting two more channels, HD2 and an HD3 channel, in the future, that was the plan to do
mm-hmm.
more development. Like you had mentioned earlier with Center for Communication Development, our
mm-hmm.
plan was to activate one of those other high-definition channels and do strictly training to young adults, young people, and get these young people off the streets. And all that's been destroyed. And that's what's the irritating part for me as a previous employee, because I look at myself as like, wow, we got so many things going on. And we've got so many things happening, but a few people can destroy that for the community based on their way of thinking. And I was talking to a very prominent community leader yesterday, and I told him, I was like, well, the one thing that irritates me is that if a person's a lawyer, you go to school to be a lawyer, you get educated, you become a lawyer, you pass the bar. Once you pass
mm-hmm.
the bar, you start practicing. All the years that you practice being a lawyer, you become more educated on how to be the best lawyer you can be, okay? I think I've earned that right in radio, and for somebody to walk in one day and say, we're going a different direction, you're not good enough for what we're trying to go, you got to go. That's very, people who don't know. Now, if those people were credentialed enough in the radio broadcast business to tell me that, I'd be okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
So when folks talk about being angry and being upset, I was angry and upset because people who don't even understand this business. And now I'm
right.
watching every single day, I'm listening every single day, And I'm sure people like yourself and Mr. Allen, who understand the radio business, y'all probably listen to the same thing I'm hearing on the air and saying, wow, these cats are messing with this FCC license. And it stirs me. People who understand it can listen and hear it, but people who don't understand it, they don't know what they're listening for. So quite naturally, with this new world of social media, folks are going to say, well, he's just mad because he got fired. Well, of course, the first 2 months, and I got fired technically in February, but officially it was in March.
Right.
But, yes, I'm going to be mad. I'll answer that question for y'all. Of course I am. But now it's gotten to the point where I'm sitting here saying to myself, y'all don't know when you're listening to your radio station that you're very close to losing it. Because just like CCD, they were actually awarded the honor of overseeing the license. That's it.
Yes.
They don't own the license. Nobody owns the license.
Nobody owns it. That's right.
CCD oversees the license. Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Any other nonprofit can come in and say, hey, when it's time for license renewal, hey, they did not look out for the best interests of our community. We want to take this license over from that radio station and complain enough, and the FCC might say, okay.
That's
a possibility.
All it would take is the filing of a petition. Let's do this, Mr. Allen, because I know I hope that we have some listeners out there and that there are so many people that maintain they know everything that's going on. Let's give that phone number, and if we have some people holding, let's get them on and let them ask some questions. We want to try to keep Mr. Quarles at least for another 10 or 15 minutes, if you will. But if we get phone lines, get hot. So let's give the number out, Don, and if we got somebody holding, we apologize, and let's get them on.
Yeah, the number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And before I go to the caller, Mr. Edwards, I would just like to dovetail off what Mr. Quarles and you were just talking about, because I actually recorded a segment of a show on KMOJ on Sunday where the guest and the host and a member of a prominent black agency basically told people to vote for Hillary Clinton. That cassette tape, that recording alone, sent to the FCC, they would get a fine so ugly that the doors would close. You know, but they don't understand that because they have not read or do they comprehend the need for oversight in that area. This is not a, and I'm not saying that because I'm a Republican.
Well, but let me say this, and Mr. Quarles knows that I clearly know what I'm talking about. It also goes to personnel and et cetera. That's what you have an engineer for. And that's why you should always have somebody on duty, particularly when you talk. It's the engineer's job to put the hand up to the throat or give them a note indicating you can't do that, okay? You can't say that anymore. Of course, that was never done. In fact, it was quite a bit of conversation about, Hillary Clinton and Democrats and et cetera. Now, if they would have brought a Republican on and members of the two other minority parties, Libertarians and Green Party, then they would have been able to at least provide some protection. I just hope in this particular situation, Mr. Allen, that you have enunciated, I hope no one files a notice of complaint with the FCC. Oops. But we got a caller. Let's get them on.
I hope I don't fall into a mailbox. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Lisa, and I'm calling from Minneapolis. And
Hi, Lisa from Minneapolis.
I'm calling. I have a few questions. One thing, Don, you just spoke on was this Sunday's show, and I was actually offended because it seemed as if it was endorsing a candidate when that's not what the distinction is set up for. It's supposed to be fair. And then as well as it only touched on the critical issues that we had in our community for maybe like 5 minutes of the show. So I was kind of taken back. When I listened to the show, and I did follow up with both of the hosts of the show, so I did do my part as a community member. But another thing I wanted to say is when a station got started, because I've been here since 1989, so I was, it's like my station, it's a community station. Was there a clause put in place to make sure that it stayed in the black community, or was it just Prince who came up to put the money up to keep it in the black community, and why did that happen?
It's the former. It's not the latter, and that is the documentation of, and it's not been repealed by Congress, is that actually KMOJ was to stay in the community. But the fault lies with the Minneapolis Public Housing, who, as Mr. Quarles said, when they were in that dilapidated building in which the walls were actually separating on Girard, it was incumbent upon the housing authority to have made arrangements to have maintained that stated integrity. Housing authority kind of abandoned, left Mr. Quarles and the station out there. As he said before, they had to find a facility and offices out on Lake Street, and then ultimately an offer was made to go into the new renovated, quote-unquote, Ackerberg building. But to your question, specific question, actually, the station's supposed to maintain its presence and physical presence in public housing.
Okay, now let me
clarify a couple of things on that, because I want to make sure that we don't put Minneapolis Public Housing in a situation where they look like the bad guys, because they're not. Because Cora McCorvey has a trooper for CCD and KMOJ for years. Mm-hmm. And what happened was they did offer us an opportunity to move into another space the public housing building.
Okay.
They did offer us that. They really did. They tried hard, but the space that they offered wasn't big enough based on the size of our operation at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, at that situation, I decided, because, see, sometimes you get to a place, and it's like anything else. You start thinking to yourself, well, it's time for us to cut the umbilical cord and grow up. And that was my mentality. Because
mm-hmm.
I've always thought, as long as you are subservient or as long as somebody else is helping you, people don't respect you in business. And I made the decision at that point to say, listen, we can't do it. There's not enough room. Then Stewart came and he gave a proposal, because he was working on that building, DeLisi's building. He said, I'll put you guys up in another one of my buildings over on Lake Street until which time that building is complete. So
mm-hmm.
we ran for the offer, and then we worked on trying to be a partner in that situation on Broadway until that happened. And let me go back to one more situation about the show on Sunday. I didn't listen. I do know I listened. Well, let me take that back. I did listen to a little bit of the show. I listened to the early part. The first 30 minutes or first 20 minutes was, and listen, I know you're the caller, and I want you to understand, because I can go straight in, and I'm not doing that. I'm going to be real honest about things because, again, I really love the station. I don't want this conversation to be a situation to where it turns into us bashing the station, because most people at that radio station are trying to do the right thing. There are some people that aren't. There are some people that don't know. I know for a fact the board members that don't know, they don't know. And I'll be honest with them. And I've always told people that's who my concern comes from, because they're the ones that's supposed to govern the station and govern the organization, which and then supposed to hire the people that's supposed to make sure they manage the station properly. But that show Sunday, they did have a conversation about community issues for about 20 minutes. This is another thing that I want everybody on this conversation to understand. If the guests and if the callers promote voting for a particular client, that's no longer an issue with the FCC. It's only an issue if the host and the people at the station push that agenda. So I don't know. I didn't hear that part. I don't know. I'm not going to defend that part. I just know that if a guest or a caller called in and said, y'all need to vote for Hillary Clinton because, quote, unquote, the Donald Trump is crazy, then that's not against the FCC regulations anymore. And as far as equal time, they kind of abolished that also. So really, I don't have to call, if I'm going to have a debate with Hillary Clinton, I don't have to call Donald Trump and say, you need equal time. Equal time is no longer an issue anymore. So I just want to be clear on that, because I want the listeners to not, I think one of the things that I always try to do here, and I think Mr. Allen, Mr. Edwards, both of y'all guys can attest to that. I'm an African-American male. I raise African-American children, and I love them to death. And I get so sick and tired of us as African-Americans going after each other. And I think that's one of the things I try to do at the station. Is I wanted the station to be a conduit for anybody to call in, anybody to come in, anybody to be able to talk about what their concerns are. I don't care what your – if you don't agree with us, and everybody knows Mr. Allen is a Republican. But Mr. Allen got a right to express what he feels on that radio station to me. And that's what I've always wanted to make happen. So I just wanted to be clear on that in reference to the be clear in reference to the situation that happened
but
Sunday.
But I think we all agree that Lisa raised a very interesting observation. Let me also say this though, for this group that's gathered. Cora, I've known Cora ever since she came here from Omaha, Nebraska. In fact, it's interesting because Cora lived two doors down from a woman by the name of Carolyn Hadley, who I previously indicated was one of the incorporators and founders of KMOJ. So I understand well what Cora did, but you have to understand Cora reports to a boss, and her boss is the mayor of the city of Minneapolis. But that's a conversation for another time. Ms. Dean, any other questions?
Well, I don't know that. I don't know about that. I can't go in depth with that. I know you can. All I can do is go by what I was witnessing.
I know, and I'm going by what I know. But that's what I'm saying.
Gotcha.
But go ahead, Ms. Dean, go ahead.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Okay, so I have one more thing to say, and this is to Mr. Quarles.
Sure.
You know, I wish for the best for you, but I also want to say that I did boycott the station before for some concerns that I had. I boycotted the boat ride. I'm sure you may be aware of that. And I was blocked from the Facebook page from KMOJ, so I hope now that they can accept me, I can go ahead and somebody unblock me. But one thing I want to ask you is what responsibility do you take for you leaving the station?
Well, first of all, let me just apologize for you getting blocked from Facebook. I had no control over our Facebook page. I have staff that took care of that, so I apologize for that. If you decided not to go to the boat ride and boycott, I apologize for that also because we want everybody to feel like they're welcome. Now, as far as my responsibility for not being at the station, if I was told a legitimate reason for being terminated, I can answer that question. I can't answer that question because of the reasons why I was told I was terminated was legitimate to me, and I can't really get into my employment situation because of legal issues. But what I can say to you is, I'm an old corporate radio person. I'm a person that works in business or been an employee for a long period of time, and I've always been judged by my work. Period. I'm sure you have too. If you go to work and your boss evaluates you and say you're doing a great job, you think you're doing a great job. If your boss walked into you tomorrow and said, "You got to go, Lisa," and you say, "Why?" I can't tell you because the laws here are at will state and they don't have to tell you. Then I'm sure you would probably question why you're terminated. Now, if somebody told me that I was terminated because they were the station was financially strapped, if somebody told me that I was terminated because I had some uphold what they asked me to do in reference to production, then I would very well say, okay, I'm cool with that. If they decide to go in a different direction and hire somebody with the same or better credentials to me because they wanted to take the station to another level, I would be okay with that. But to be told one day, and this is how it happened with me, and I can't tell you this part. I got an email one Thursday night, late that night, and I just happened to look on my phone and saw an email. And I was told to meet off-site at an undisclosed site to have a meeting. And when I had that meeting, I was suspended. So when that happens, and then you ask why, and you're told we can't talk about you talk about that right now. But you can't talk to community members, you can't talk to staff, you can't talk to the media, you can't talk to anybody. When you're told and presented that the very next day. Then, of course, you don't know. I still, to this day, Lisa, don't know why I was terminated. I still don't. There's all kinds of rumors going out there, and you probably heard some of them, which is why you asked that question. You probably heard the rumors, but rumors are just that, and that's what we have to start getting away from. You know, I was hired here in 2004 to do a job for KMOJ, not to deal with the rumors. Now, if anybody else or you or anybody want to start addressing the rumors, then you're welcome to do that. That has nothing to do with me and my lawyer and my legal issue. My legal issue is about my employment, period.
Okay. I think that you've satisfied that because we had conversations, Lisa, that his attorneys have advised him on what his legal standing and response should be. If you get anything else, Lisa? If not, thank you.
Yes, one more thing. Now, we do still have personalities still there, and I want, and they are listening. I hope that because they still have their job. And I want to say that I didn't hear any of the rumors, and that's why I'm listening, because I want to find out from you. But I know the reason why I boycotted the station because of some concerns that I had with what was going on with the personnel there, and one specifically with Sunny Day no longer being working at the station, because you know he had a good show. But one thing I want to say is, are you willing, and if the staff, the people who are still there, I hope that you guys are proactive in making sure that this remains a community station, no matter what the issue is, but that you all continue to work to keep this station within our community.
Right.
And that's what
I said. Right. I think he will certainly give you that guarantee. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Allen, we have anybody else holding? Because there should be some folks out there who want to know about the future of their station.
Yeah, I know. We don't have anybody else holding, but I do have a couple of questions here quickly I'd like to run by. And, you know, it's part of my ongoing. Kevin Corals, when I first found out about this, okay, because of day, I said, damn, I'm not going to have anybody to mess with. You know,
this is
right. And I said, I can't even talk about the brother no more because he ain't there no more. I said, damn, but
that's right.
Because it caught me by surprise, and then I got pissed off. And I said, okay, and then I found out about this this ragtag band of board members, and I said that this is ridiculous. But over the time, I remember a long time ago when you guys were on Lake Street, I came in and I talked to you, Mr. Corals, about a particular show that you had on the air and sponsorships that were happening and the money wasn't reaching GAMOJ, but you were already aware of that being a corporate radio type, and so you kind of cut the umbilical cord on that. Okay, that was cool.
Right.
You didn't even have to bring up names or anything like that. But throughout the years from that particular conversation to the different grants of over $100,000 that have been given to agencies locally here for the missions of reaching the black community, which KMOJ does eloquently. I haven't seen very much of that, and more particularly like maybe the M-Sure grant that came in that was like $193,000 to a particular agency. Did KMOJ get an opportunity from that black agency to collaborate with the black community, I guess is what I'm asking. And you don't have to go into detail. This is basically looking for a yes or a no.
Well, to be honest with you, Don, yeah, you and we go way back, and I know that you're about money, and I can appreciate that, because I can respect that, because it takes money to run an organization, and I know that one of the things I've always learned in this business, especially one of the things that I learned since I've been at KMOJ, and I think my mentor said that's what you got to learn, because you got to understand how to navigate your way through all kinds of landmines in the community is you have people that worry about programming, you have people that worry about money, and you have people that worry about the image of the organization. And I just want people to understand that I respect and understand all three of the entities, because I know how important, if your programming is your product, I always tell my staff, programming is product. You know, we don't have a tangible product. We don't have a can of soda. We can't go say, this can of soda costs 95 cents. Our programming is our product. What people hear is what they hear, and that's what they're going to listen to. You take that product, and once you build your audience, you go and sell it. Well, as you know, non-commercial radio stations don't have the luxury, like commercial radio stations, to sell their product as heavily as other organizations. So what we do is we depend very heavily on donations, and we depend very heavily on grant dollars. And the organization you had mentioned, I didn't know anything about them receiving money for outreach. Over the years since I've been here, I've been blessed enough to speak with or to get the trust of community leaders who are overseeing organizations, and we have started getting grant dollars or outreach dollars allocated to go to the station so they can get their messages out. We had also received grant dollars from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is a federal grant, and from the state of Minnesota to maintain their legacy program. And our goal was to maintain the legacy and history the African-American experience in Minnesota. I'm not sure where those grants lie right now. I know that financially it takes money to run that radio station, and I know financially it takes money to keep moving it forward. I know Lisa had mentioned earlier that she was concerned about the on-air talent. I think a lot of times, and I use the analogy all the time, you know, when you look at the Dallas Cowboys, all you know about the Dallas Cowboys is the players, and you want them to win on the field. Now, the Dallas Cowboys may not be a good analogy because the owner, Jerry Jones, is just as well known as the players. But in most cases, with most NFL teams, you don't know who the owner is, correct? So administratively, they're doing what they got to do to keep those players on the field and keep building their brand. Well, radio is the same way. So I understand and respect people's love for the on-air talent because I was one. And what we try to do is promote and build those radio talent, that radio talent up to a point where, for me, I want you to move on, go to another market, build your brand and keep growing so we can put somebody else in your spot and they can grow them. I know she had mentioned Sunny Day. Sunny Day is a real good friend of mine. You know, I know we had issues when the situation went down, but Sunny Day is a great talent. So I know people get mad when their talent's no longer on the radio and they hear the rumors and they hear what goes on and what happens and so on and so forth. But that at the end of the day, our job is to move people forward in their careers if their career is going to be radio. I'm not really concerned. Well, Kelvin, let me say this. Kelvin Quarles is not concerned about somebody who wants to be a local hero and be a superstar for 25, 34 years in Minneapolis. I want you to grow, move on to a different market, continue to grow your craft, and make money because I know that KMOJ, most of these people on the air are volunteers, or they're not making money, the money that I know they can make in this industry. This is a very, very serious industry, and I know listeners get very, very attached to the air personalities, and that's fine. We want them to, but be willing to let them go so they can continue to grow as individuals and not think that all the time that they're being mistreated, because I don't mistreat my jocks. I've always been a person who's always been very, very conscious of how my personalities feel because I was a personality at one time. So as we continue, as that station, and I think, I'm kind of going off track here a little bit, but I really want to reiterate the fact that as a training facility, people got to understand that, and they got to understand from a governance position that whatever you hear, whatever you think, doesn't matter, that station and that license is the most important thing to this community. So when you think, because listeners think that the on-air personality is going to keep the station around, they're not. I've worked at stations, and I'm sure both of you gentlemen probably seen it happen or you've probably been a witness to it. I've worked at a station. One day I walked in on Monday, they said, "We're changing the format to country. All you guys are gone."
Oh, yeah.
The urban radio station. It happens all the time. And I'm going to go back to what Mr. Edwards said earlier. If it's infiltrated by anybody other than African-Americans who have African-Americans' best interests at heart, they can come in and change it to whatever they want to change it in if they take control of the FCC license. That's the most – everybody in that building, everybody on the governance board of the board of directors, and everybody who's listening to this conversation right now need to be concerned about that FCC license because that's the most important thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Period. Because you can go to anybody. No, Prince can't save it. And I know Prince, God rest his soul, he's passed away. But nobody can save that FCC license if somebody else takes control of it. They can change it to whatever format they want. Period.
That's right. Yep. All right, Ms. Quarles, appreciate the time you spent with us. We've got a couple other items we've got to deal with for our listening audience. Mr. Allen, you want to wrap it in?
Yeah, we do have a call. Yeah, we
have a
call.
They have a question for Mr. Quarles.
With quick question. Go ahead, caller. You're live on the air.
Is this me, Don?
Caller, you're live on the air. Yes, you are. You are on.
Okay, first I just want to say that I've enjoyed the conversation today. I love listening to your show, and Ron, you have so much history on the inside of you that it is just wonderful to hear you speak.
Thank you.
First, I have a comment, and my comment is that I would like for you guys to do a show to either define or redefine what a black community leader is. Because just because you are a black leader of an organization does not make you a community leader. And I think we get those things mixed up because they don't always have the best interests of the community. And a leadership is a process, again, of social influence, and I really don't see that in our community. So if you could do a show on that, that would be wonderful.
All right. Do you have a question for Mr. Quarles?
I do. The question I have is, if KMOJ is a community radio station, then why did they move away from having the community be more involved? I understand they have a community board, but community members be more involved in maybe the day-to-day operations or having more of a board presence? And then my other question would be, how can we as community members get involved right now? What would you recommend that we do, those of us who are interested in getting involved?
All right. Thank you. Okay. Charles, go right ahead.
Okay. Well, there's actually, first of all, there's two entities that are supposed to be in place. There's supposed to be a community advisory committee or a community advisory board for Center for Communication and Development. That oversees, and basically what the community advisory committee is a conduit between the overall community and those governing board members, the board of directors, okay? The board of directors, which by the bylaws is supposed to be a minimum of 13 members. It could be as high as 20, but, you know, when I came, as I told you guys earlier, it was 16. So it's supposed to be at least a minimum of 13. Those community advisory board members are supposed to advise the board on basic chatter about the community. I mean, just anything. Say, for instance, I was out here and I was driving drunk every night. I'm using this analogy. I was driving drunk every night, and people in the community who was at clubs and whatever saw me. Every time I see them at the club, Mr. Quarles is always drunk. And they go to the community advisory committee, and the community advisory committee take that in, and then they go to the board and say, hey, we've heard from the community that Mr. Quarles is always drunk. Then the board's responsibility is to address that issue with me as the executive director or, quote, unquote, the general manager. So that's how it's supposed to work. That's not how it's working right now. Now, as far as community members getting more involved, I had said earlier in reference to transparency, that organization, just like any other nonprofit, I mean, I know you guys probably, because you've probably been to some of the meetings, some of the Minneapolis Public School Board meetings and some of the park board meetings. Those organizations they have to be as transparent as possible. KMOJ or CCD's board has to be the same way. Anytime someone has to come to a board meeting, they're responsible to allow that person to come and talk to the board about their issues as a community member. You don't have to go to the community advisory committee. You can come in as a board member, as a community member and say, okay, the board meetings are the fourth or fifth Wednesday of the month. I want to come to one. You reach out to them and say, I want to come to a board meeting. And you come down, you sit down, you express your concerns. You sit down, you learn how they operate. Whatever you want to do, you're supposed to be that way, and it's supposed to be transparent. That's where the problem's coming in right now, because that's not what's going on. So I think most of the issues right now is based on the fact that it's not as transparent as it's supposed to be. So people don't know what's going on, so people are asking questions. And I'm going to be honest with you guys. You know, I came here in 2004 from Atlanta. You know, I've got a career that I can go somewhere else. I've actually turned down a couple of jobs thinking that, like I mentioned earlier, that the girlfriend's going to come back and open her eyes, but the girlfriend's not. So I'm job hunting. But at the end of the day, if Kelvin's gone, you guys as a community, and you as Ron Edwards, the historian, you as Don Edwards, so I'm going to keep everybody straight. Y'all have to make sure that this station stays in this community, because if you don't, it's going to go away. And one of the things that I've always said, and I've said this over the last few months since I've not been there, because I don't want people to continue to think that I'm bitter because I'm an ex-employee, because that's not the issue for me anymore. I want them to understand that my passion, every time you hear from me, is not coming from an ex-employee. My passion comes from an experienced radio broadcaster who understands the repercussions of people not standing up for their radio station, because if a commercial, KMOJ was owned by a commercial entity, they can change the format tomorrow and wouldn't care what nobody thinks.
Right.
But due to the fact that the history of this organization was built on the backs of African-Americans who said we need our own voice,
mm-hmm.
and now you got people who don't listen, who ain't even listening to the African-Americans in this community, that's where your concern can be, should be. Your concern should be based on what Mr. Edwards said earlier in reference to the fact that he heard rumors that there are some white people trying to infiltrate. That should be scary to a lot of people. I don't care who runs it. Personally, I don't care who runs it at this point. All I know is protect your FCC license, protect who that station is focused on, protect the fact that that station is a community station for African Americans, period. When I came here and I changed our positioning statement to the people station, people kept saying, well, should we be more inclusive to other demographics? I said, no. People listen to KMOJ because we are black, and they want to experience the black experience. They want, and I'm going to say this, and I know you guys are blog radio, so I probably will get in trouble. But when I moved from Atlanta, when I was in Atlanta, I heard about the interracial relationship. So I know white folks, and I've watched the Black Lives Matter movement here, and I know white folks like to help black people. There's white people out there that want to help black people. But make sure that your voice stays in your community, that nobody takes control, because you can't trust who takes control of your voice. And your voice is KMOJ, period. I don't care what nobody says. They can talk about every other medium. They can talk about every other radio station. They can talk about every TV station. But KMOJ is the black voice of this community, and you cannot let it go under no circumstances.
All right.
As Malcolm X says, by any means necessary,
make sure
it stays.
All right. Brother Quarles, want to thank you for taking the time.
Gentlemen, thank you so much, gentlemen.
And,
I appreciate it.
All right. Stay strong.
Okay.
Take care.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right.
Bye now.
I don't know what that is you're playing, Don. Don, quickly, because we got about 14 minutes left, and I just think it's imperative. I know this morning you had the opportunity to be on one of the big commercial stations, and you had the young lady who allegedly broke the story about Omar and the double marriage and all of that. I'm not even bothered to getting into that because it appeared that documentation wasn't there. But let me just remind people of something that has to do with the rules of the legislature, Don. And that is, if this matter isn't cleared up to the satisfaction of the politicians and members of the legislature, in this particular case, the House of Representatives, I don't know that people, and see, we in the black community, because we lose our historical perspectives all the time, or pretend, don't remember this particular situation. But we had the unfortunate situation 20 years ago of having, at that time, the only African-American member of the Minnesota legislature expelled and forced out because of the following rule. And that is, come January, when the Minnesota legislature convenes, if, in fact, as they get ready to take the oath of office, any member in good standing rises on the floor and addresses the chair of the legislature, the speaker, and indicates a particular clause and asks Ms. Omar to stand down from taking the oath of office, she has no choice but to do that, and then the matter will go to a special committee. Primarily ethics. So I just want to remind all of the folks out there that are dismissing the seriousness of what's being put out there that she can be blocked in January from being allowed,
mm-hmm.
I use that word again, from being allowed to take the oath of office and be asked to stand down and to leave the chambers. Okay? And again, phone lines are open for that. Why don't you give the number again, Mr. Allen? Are you still here with us?
Sure. Yes,
give the number
here,
again in case anybody wants to ask any questions about that.
347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And the lines are open.
So, but I understand that, unfortunately, this morning, it didn't really have the kind of documentation that was really needed.
Well,
I mean, is that correct? Or what the hell happened?
Yeah, between our production meeting, Mr. Edwards, and the show, Ilion came out with a response to the allegation.
Okay.
She basically said that she was 19 years old in 2002, and this guy was the father of her children. There's three people living together in Columbia Heights. She was traditionally or culturally married to one and getting ready to marry another one. I mean, the statement from her is pretty detailed, but they danced around. But this is enough for someone, as you said, in the house to stand up and say, hey, you know, we want to look at this. But it took her, what, 4 or 5 days to come up with this particular statement that explains that she's reconciled with one guy and they have married in their faith tradition and raising their family together, but there's still no answer if there was a divorce from the other person.
And that that would be the first husband who allegedly she was married to in 2002. Okay. And so the 2009 rumor about a marriage certificate, because there was no, this morning, as example, there was no photocopy of any marriage license for either one of the two individuals, correct? And I'm excluding Omar. I'm talking about the two gentlemen. I mean, is that correct?
I have not seen one.
Okay.
I can say that.
Yeah. All right. Well, like I said, just want to tell people they need to do their research, because this is a strong possibility that Republicans or Democrats, all depends how strong the anti-Islamic thing is, could stand and block her from taking the oath of office, and at that point the sergeant of arms would approach her and would ask her to leave the chambers. If she tried to be recognized by the chair of the House of Representatives, she would not be recognized until at such time as a special ethics committee had been convened and the matter had been reviewed, testimony had been taken, and then a recommendation would be made from the committee to the full House. And then the House would have to vote on the issue of acceptable credentials. So you heard it here on the Ron and Don program, okay?
Yes, you did. Mr.
Edwards,
we have a caller. Caller, go ahead.
Let's get the caller. How much time we have left? Caller, go ahead.
What's
your question?
Live on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yes, gentlemen, this is Mr. M. I've been listening to your program. Very, 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 very informative. I really enjoyed the gentleman from KMOJ and hearing about that. You know, we really don't want to lose our station. We really don't. But in regards to your, you know, your second topic with the, you know, the young lady that has the mysteries surrounding her, I guess, personal life.
I like that. Right. Yes, sir. Your observation, sir.
You know, I guess the thing is, you know, we really just don't know. I mean, because, you know, there isn't a lot of documentation from the culture that they come from. And I'm not knocking anybody or anybody's culture because, see, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what color you are. I don't care what religion you are. I care about what you, if you're going to be a politician, what are you going to do for me and my family and my community, okay?
Yes, sir.
So that can, it doesn't matter what, I mean, Democrat, Republican, that means nothing to me either. I mean, what it means is the person and what they're going to do. And with this, you know, unfortunately, with the, you know, the culture of the individuals coming from a different, different culture where we really don't.
Different religion, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Verifying, you know, names and background. I mean, how many, even some of the articles point out, you know, how many people are named Ilhan. How many people are named Muhammad?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
Who really knows who's who? I mean, it's like the old joke, and people call me racist, and that's fine, you know. But I'm not.
I don't think.
But
you
I
are.
Mean, it's like old joke.
You're understanding your culture. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. The old joke of the individual, the fat guy. They said, well, he has more chins than a Chinese phone book. I mean.
Right.
I was at a Viking game, you know, at the old, on the old days at the old Met Stadium, and a guy comes over the loudspeaker and says, "Will Mr. Steve Larson come to the public relations office for an important message?"
And about 10 guys got up.
500 people get up and go to the thing. Okay?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But those Steve Larsons have birth certificates. Those Steve Larsons have Social Security numbers.
Right.
Those Steve Larsons have verifiable information about their background, even though they have the same name. So I guess I'm still mystified by the information I've heard on the candidate. I mean, it seems like she won the endorsement fairly and squarely. I mean, I'm not certainly.
She won the primary election because that was the primary, and she's obviously going to sweep through the general election because there's nobody on the other side. So, of all practical purposes, as the paper said Wednesday morning, she is elected. Okay. See, what puzzled me was why this information was delayed until after a determination was made. You would think that somebody armed with that information, particularly Mr. Allen from the right, would have brought that information forward to either the other Somalian who was running or the 40-year incumbent, which Phyllis Kahn was. I mean, man, I can remember I was a young man when Phyllis got elected because she used to be somewhat involved in some civil rights issues in our community 40, 45, 50 years ago. I think your observation is absolutely correct, M. I'm just not sure what the purpose of the timing was. Now, you know, and I'm made to understand that that the gentleman who would have been the second husband, I understand, Mr. Allen, is it true or can you verify or not that he's no longer even in the country?
He is in the UK.
He's in the UK. Yeah. So I don't know what that. Yeah. Also, there's something implied here that, you know, maybe we as Americans, quote unquote, of a particular culture and religion, you know, there's this dark hint now that she, you know, when you talk about the ages of her children, I understand her children are 13, 8, and I think 6. I'm not sure on the last two. But that implies, apparently, that there may have been incest, and I just think that that's real foul. You know what I'm saying? When you start talking in terms of this second marriage under color of whatever religion, but you start implying that at least one, possibly two, certainly I guess not the 13-year-old, is the product of incest, that's pretty foul.
Well, but, you know, that's your question, too. I mean, what constitutes illegal in this country? I mean, and again, I'm not any kind of, you know, going by what's legal, and because what's legal to me doesn't necessarily mean what's right. And really, we have historical precedents, I believe, for that statement. Just because it's legal doesn't mean it's right. But our marriages, I mean, because you're from a different culture, because your origin is from a different place, can you just say
I understand what you're saying. Unfortunately, we're
married,
down to the last 2 minutes.
Yeah, I'm married. You know what I mean? What?
Well, let me tell you what the trick is going to be, and we have about a minute and a half left. Want all of us to keep this in mind. Omar will be required to take an oath, and I would suggest that people read that oath because one of the things that oath says that I swear to uphold the laws of the United States of America. You understand where I'm going with that. That's the reason I've said to both of y'all, to my colleagues and et cetera, that this matter needs to be settled up because that will be the prima facie to ask that she not be allowed to take the oath. You understand where I'm going? All right. Thank you, Em.
Mm-hmm.
I hear Mr. Allen temping up James Brown. He's going to walk us home. Take us in.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Okay?
All right.
Take you eyes to make a pair. Brother, we can't quit until we get our shit.